Welcome back to The Evolution of a Snake. I'm Zach.
And I'm Madeline.
And this is Speak Now, Taylor's Version, our review of The Woman, the Myth, the Legend, the long-lost re-recording that is finally here. And before we get into it, I just want to remind everyone, because I think I forgot to plug this in the last episode, that we have a Patreon. Patreon.com/Swiftologist, where you can access up to 12 bonus episodes a month and get access to our Discord, which is about to hit 1,000 members. It's popping off. It is the funnest, coolest place on the internet if you're a Taylor Swift fan. Let me tell you, there's nothing like it. And we keep hearing that as a rave review from the audience. So if you're interested, for as little as $3 a month, you can go there. And now that I'm done with my shilling, Madeline, why don't you describe Speak Now, Taylor's Version in three words?
You're always asking me these goddamn bullshit-ass questions. Nostalgic.
She can't do it.
Nostalgic.
She can't do it. Okay.
We have one.
Okay. Faithful? I would say faithful. That's a word I would use.
Nostalgic, faithful, and cute. There we go. Nostalgic, cute. Faithful, and cute. That's how I would describe it. What about you?
I like the beat, personally. Those are my four words. I like the beat. And I think it doesn't really get deeper than that for me. Although, you know, with the discourse that has been going on about Speak Now, Taylor's Version, you would be led to believe that this album was some sort of hack job. And I have to say that overall, I think this is probably the best re-recording so far. I mean, just, you know, law of averages. The vault tracks were decent overall. I would say there were, like, not a lot of flops. And I thought that most of the re-recordings, if not all, were pretty much spot on. I don't have any major complaints. What about you, Madeline?
I don't have any major complaints. There's no song that I think was, like, totally botched. Hold on, I just noticed that my dress came undone. Hold on. It's like, this is why I have to be able to see myself.
Literally.
It's not like it's so scandalous, but it's like sorry. I was like, I can't pretend I didn't notice that for the whole. Sorry. I'm trying to fix this stupid
Well, the girlies that get the video are just going to get this entire segment.
Well, this is
so
kind of like being on the Patreon. You get this kind of shit. And I had the camera set up just right so that I could see. There we go. Okay.
Now you can see yourself. You're not flashing our loving snakes.
No, I can see myself and I can tell that I'm buttoned up. Do that.
Buttoned up. Jesus. Professional. Ready to go.
Okay. I'm ready. Flop.
Okay, you were saying that you thought there were no botches, so continue from there.
There are no botches, and you know, the other girls can't say the same. Fearless TV and Red TV can absolutely not say the same. We lost some soldiers.
They can't relate.
We lost some soldiers on Fearless TV and Red TV. Everything on Speak Now is pretty true to form. Nothing is bad, which is really all that you can ask for when you're getting a re-recorded album, just for nothing to be bad. And nothing is. We won. Speak Now, we won. It only took her three times
the
charm.
We won. On her third try, she managed to get one right. And you know what? I think someone gave some tips, if you listen on Spotify, to like turn off audio normalization and auto mixing, I think. And that made the world of difference. I thought that people were just saying that, but it actually really changed the way that some of these re-recordings hit to me, specifically Haunted. Haunted hit so much better when I turned off these like very strange and seemingly insignificant audio control tools. They really did. So I guess before we get into like the reception of Speak Now, why don't we go through the track list and discuss what was good, what was a slay, what was not, and then we'll get into the vaults. And then we'll talk about kind of like a more meta commentary on the re-recordings and how this one was perceived. Better Than Revenge is going to get a segment on this episode, you better believe. So Christopher Rowe, thank you. We give you flowers. Finally, I guess bullying works. Bullying works because he got his shit together on this one. I thought the production overall was so much more thoughtful and considered. And I felt like This started with if this was a movie TV. Like, I really felt that if this was a movie TV was a sleigh. I loved hearing like the violins, the strings coming in the second verse. That was something that was kind of buried in the original mix. And I think that in general, these production elements on this go around are so much crisper and clearer. And I feel like I get a different, fuller understanding of the arrangement of the songs. How did you feel about the production overall?
You know, for me, somebody who has listened to the original songs and you two 15 million gazillion trillion times, I pretty much never like it. I think it always sounds weird. I think it always sounds like a wormhole. I'm not like a production girly, so it's like the drums are at 2K.78. I don't know shit like that. So it's like, to me, it's like, sounds different. It sounds bad. Pretty much always. So I don't know. I'm a hater.
Wow.
I guess I don't.
So you don't have any Tell Me Whys? You don't have any Hey Stevens for this record?
Yeah, but I mean.
Let's go through them. Let's go through them and discuss.
Yeah.
The first one is The Woman, The Myth, The Legend. And this was the biggest surprise for me, mine, Taylor's version. I was so sure that not only was this not going to be good, it was going to be fucking bad. Because historically, she's paid mine dust. She can never remember the lyrics. And I don't know, it just seemed kind of like a complicated song. It had a lot of like different moving parts. And I was very pleasantly surprised. There are slight differences, obviously, but I didn't get any like choppiness, which is my number one thing with the re-records, is some of them sound like you can hear multiple vocal takes. That really pisses me off. Forever and Always is a good example of that. And I felt like mine was from start to finish kind of a slay for me. And the last chorus really goes off, but it just goes off anyway. I was most scared for this one, and I felt like it went well.
Mine TV, inoffensive, commits no crimes. It simply is mine re-recorded.
Nobody,
and that's all
no
I
crime.
Have to say about it. Nobody, no crime. I have no opinion
Nobody,
on it.
Nobody, no crime. Now, up next is Sparks Fly. And Sparks Fly, I have to say, has been catching fucking strays. Sparks Fly TV. This is the one I see people complaining about the most. And I personally don't really listen to the standard edition of Sparks Fly anyway. I'm more of a Sparks Fly Speak Now Tour head because I just love the live arrangement of it. I think it's so much more bombastic and interesting. So when I heard Sparks Fly the first time, I was like, okay, sure, anyway, I don't really care. To me, it was like a 15. It was like close to the original, nothing amazing, nothing stand out. But upon re-listen, I could hear what people are saying. But again, that youthful tone is never going to be recaptured completely. It's always going to be different. It's really a question of, is it good different or bad different? And to me, Sparks Fly is just kind of mediocre different.
This is one of those ones. I always describe some of the Taylor's version songs as like being through a wormhole. And this is definitely a wormhole one. It's like there's nothing that I can particularly point out, like this is what's wrong with it. Not specifically, but it's like the Coraline button person version of Sparks Fly. There's something really sinister about it to me. And like also, the bridge is bad. And like she doesn't sound good. On my notes, it just goes, her vocals on it are also with like 16,000 periods. And then I finally go, bad. It's like, it's not good. I don't know what it is about it, but I don't like it. And
I remember you saying before that you were sure that it would be bungled. You were like, Sparks Fly is not going to work.
I've said this a million times.
Not going to be able to
do it. Cannot catch lightning in a bottle twice. Sometimes things can only be what they are just one time. Stop trying, et cetera, et cetera. And sometimes it pisses me off because people are acting like, first of all, this was never supposed to happen. We were never supposed to have two versions of Sparks Fly.
It's a treat.
It's a treat. And sometimes it's a curse. I didn't ask for this. I don't want it. I don't like it. So that's my opinion on
You didn't want to hear it in the first place?
Exactly.
Well, up next is what I consider to be maybe a botch that I think a lot of people don't, which is Back to December. And my issue with this is there is literally a technical glitch in the first pre-chorus because the last time you saw me, like she literally guffaws. It is so bad. And I keep seeing people say this is the slay of the century. And like the last chorus goes off, but only again, because that's just how the song is. I think this one sounds like multiple takes comped together, and I don't like it.
I can't speak to the glitch. I'm not somebody who has in recent years been turning up back to December, so I can't speak to is it wrong,
fake.
Is it right. But I will say that she sounds bored as fuck. Like she couldn't care less about that boy and his tan skin, because she doesn't. And that's her right.
She doesn't.
Why should she?
Why should she? I mean, the whole song is about how she didn't care about him to begin with.
Right.
So like, you know, it's hard to muster up that feeling again. But I think, yeah, it's interesting to see which songs that she loves and puts care into and which ones she doesn't give a fuck about. And to me, Sparks Fly and Back to December are songs that she clearly doesn't give a shit about. And shockingly, up next is a song that I think she really gives a shit about because she keeps playing it. And this re-recording was so cute and so fun. This is Madeline's Nemesis, Speak Now, the song.
So Speak Now TV kind of goes off, you know, it's inoffensive. It kind of sounds good. I don't mind it. But again, I don't listen to Speak Now the song. So it's like, does it sound the same as the original? I don't know. Is it botched? I don't know. I think it sounds okay. But I wouldn't know.
To me, it's like Hey Steven. It definitely got the Hey Steven treatment to me, where it's like the advent of her being a little bit older makes it kind of funny and nostalgic in a way that's like cute to me. It's very cute.
No opinion.
But the song is cute.
No opinion. No opinion.
Well, I wonder if you'll have an opinion on this next song. Track 5, The Hallowed, The Woman, The Myth, The Legend, Dear John. How did you feel about this, Madeline?
Well, with Dear John, something that I really looked forward to was we always talked about like, oh, her grown-up vocals. As if, by the way, she sounds bad on the original. She doesn't. She sounds amazing on the original as well. But it's interesting to me because the first time I heard it, it was the first song I listened to from the record, from Speak Now TV. And, you know, I was bawling. I was like, this is incredible. She's a queen. She's a goddess. She can do nothing wrong, et cetera, et cetera. And then somebody said on my TL that in the bridge, when she's singing, she sounds very strained. And I was like, no, let me check this out. So I listened to it, you know, a second or third time, and I was like, it actually does sound kind of strained. Like, it sounds like she's really trying hard. She sounds better doing it live than she does on the re-record.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
I found that really interesting. Was it just a bad day? I wonder if she kind of gets into her head maybe when she's recording about it being exactly the same. Because that's kind of been the main, I think, feedback from fans is like, why are these songs so different? So I wonder if that like stresses her out while she's singing it and like plays into it a little bit. And also like a song like Dear John, she knows she has to serve. She knows that she has absolutely no choice but to serve because people care.
Yeah.
Yeah. People care about it. And it was pretty good overall, but I found that her vocals were very wispy. Like it sounded very breathy. And I don't remember the original version having a lot of breath in it.
Well, you know, if I can share something, I feel like I've said this before, but not as concretely or specifically because I don't want to get tomatoes thrown at me. But a lot of the vocals on all of the Taylor's versions are weird, right? And it's and at first I was like, okay, it's only because it's a different, it's like a new version of the song and you're used to the old version. And that's why it sounds like her vocals are weird. But it's like, as we go through all of them, it's like nasally. Does anybody else hear this? Am I crazy? She sounds nasally like
her
on
voice
all
has changed.
Of them.
Yeah.
But it,
her voice
but
is different.
I don't think she sounds nasally on Midnights.
I guess
insane?
That's just because
am I
it's
a
new
psychopath?
To us.
I'm a psychopath. I really am. Nobody else agrees with me. I literally almost can't listen
I see
to
what you're saying.
Most of the Taylor's versions because I swear to God, she sounds it's almost like there's a different microphone being used or something. I think I'm a psychopath.
Well, there is. There is. It's just that you've listened to the song so many times that like even the most minute difference, like you said, is gonna throw you off and send you into a wormhole.
You know what?
My perspective on a lot of the TVs is that they're new songs. I'm like, this is a new song to me. Do I like the way that it sounds or not?
See, I can't do it. And I think this is like a personal problem for me. And why? And it's like, if there, we need a support group for like people who absolutely
no, there are a lot of people in your position.
Engage with like some, I would say for me, a good 85% of the Taylor's versions, I straight up can't engage with because
yeah. Well, same. Yeah. I'm not going like to listen to Forever and Always TV. That's just not happening. It's not my truth. It's not my reality. Can't do it.
And I also feel like it's like major taboo, not for everybody. I think this is a very specific sect of the fandom that's just very loud and pervasive. They're not actually a majority, they're a minority. But it's like, I feel like you're not allowed to say, you're not even allowed to say that you prefer one over the other. You're not allowed to say that one's bad, one's, you can't say that, you just have to listen to the Taylor's versions. And it's like TV. Coming from like a,
well, this is why I left TikTok.
It like really rubs me the
this
wrong
way. This is why I left TikTok. I was like, I can't have you at the age of 13 telling me that I have to listen to Forever and Always Taylor's version. That's none of your fucking business. You don't have the credentials to be commenting on whether or not I should. But I think with Dear John and with so many of the songs of that ilk, the issue is that like, and actually for Speak Now in general, is that her youth and her naivete was such a big character. It loomed large over this record. And like hearing her sing it now, even if it sounded the same, it's like the perspective that she's coming at it with is totally different. And you have that in the back of your mind when you're listening to it. So I think that changes the way that you receive songs like Dear John. It didn't hit me the way that Dear John, the original, like the original version killed me when I heard it for the first time. And this didn't kill me. I was like, oh, okay, that's just Dear John, the remix, or like the re-up. Cool.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel about it too. And it's kind of depressing in a way that's like, I don't know, this is sort of like a big event. It's a thing that's happening. And I feel like we should be able to speak openly about it. But it's like, you're literally not allowed to do anything with them other than have endless, overwhelming praise. For it's like,
mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm in,
well,
the
that's even
of
being
Oz.
Reflected in the reviews. Yeah, this is being reflected by critics too. People are literally scared to critique her at the moment. And that is dumb, to say the least. To say the very fucking least, that is dumb. Up next is Mean, the song. Heard of it? This is a stupid song. This is a dumb, silly, idiot brain song. And when I listened to the TV, I was like, damn, this is a bad song. That was the only kind of thought that I had coming away from it. I was like, this is stupid.
You know what I found really interesting is that she doesn't do the fake country accent, but she also doesn't not do the fake country accent.
It's you guys so know it? Weird.
It's like
there's a twang.
There's a twang.
There's a
like
twang. But like, what is it?
What is that? It's maybe it's just because you hear a banjo and you're immediately transported to the watering
to a
hole,
place of country.
You know, the saloon, et cetera, et cetera, whatever. I think Mean is
going to the crick.
Mean is one of those songs, along with Better Than Revenge, along with, I don't know, maybe Speak Now the song if you wanted to, that like has that very girlish, immature thing. You really shouldn't be listening to it past age 22. And if you are, like, seek help, I guess. Like, why are you listening?
Yeah, seek help.
Yeah. So it's,
I never see anyone writing for Mean, to be fair. This is one of those songs that like truly has no shooters, and that I'm sure there are some now that
they're
I've said
they're
going
come.
To be.
Yeah.
They're going to come. But in general, I don't see people writing hard for Mean. When it was a surprise song, I don't remember anyone going, I'm gagging for it. It is, I mean, I started laughing when it got to the bridge. You know, she spends the whole song being like, it's so terrible that people get bullied. And then it ends with, you are a liar, you are pathetic, and you will die alone.
And also, two songs later, we get into Better Than Revenge. So it's like the most disingenuous. But it's like, I mean, at the time, I wrote for it. I'm not going to lie. I thought this was genius. I thought
when I was bullied in middle school,
oh, I turned it
let
up.
Me tell you,
I turned it up.
I can see you years from now in a bar. Literally, yeah. That was me.
Yep.
Every day of my life. Up next, The Story of Us. The Story of Us. You know, the last chorus really has the tell me why treatment for the song. Like the vocals just go insane. I don't know if she had the vocal, the chops to really do it justice the first time around. I mean, obviously it is perfect the way that it was, but I really appreciated hearing the big girl vocals on this one. Like I noticed the difference in her vocal ability when I listened to this re-record.
I think that Story of Us TV spanks. I think it bangs. I think it does exactly what it's supposed to do. This was one that I kind of predicted would get the tell me why treatment, other side of the door treatment. It just couldn't do anything else but be a banger. So that's what it is. I like it.
It had no choice.
It simply had to bang.
And the pop rock influence came through a lot clearer with the re-recordings, just because you can hear all the different instruments. There's a lot of drums on this record.
Oh, yeah.
Like a lot. And I loved to hear it. Up next, Never Grow Up. This one to me was a perfect re-record. Like, no notes. It was good. It was faithful to the original. I don't think you listened to it. Did you listen to it?
I was like, okay, what are we doing fake next? And I went to my notes and it goes into Enchanted. And I was like, oh, Never Grow Up. I was like, I haven't listened to it.
Skip Never Grow Up.
I skip it.
It's good. Honestly, I love Never Grow Up. It made me emotional again because I think that Never Grow Up, you know, I just realized everything I have is someday going to be gone. I think that's a real thesis statement for the record. And I was surprised how bowled over I was by hearing it again. And there was something very bittersweet about hearing an older Taylor Swift here sing this song again, because I feel like the questions that she raised in this song that she realized for the first time back then are questions that you kind of deal with for your whole life. It's like, oh my God, I wish I never grew up. Like, I want to chill. I want to be a child. I don't want to worry. I don't want to stress. I don't want to have my master's bought out from under me by Scooter fucking Braun. I just want to rock. I literally just want to rock. And she couldn't. But yeah, so for me, slay. For Madeline, not never going to listen. Up next, Enchanted. Enchanted. To me, this is a different song. Enchanted TV is something else.
Here's what I said in my notes. I'm just going to read this exactly. I said, you could put Jesus Christ himself on background vocals on this Taylor's version, and it wouldn't replace the original. There is nothing wrong with this other than it is simply not the original. It's just one of those songs. It doesn't matter what. She could gussy it up, put all the fucking bells and whistles on Enchanted. I almost said Evermore. On Enchanted that you could think of. And it's just like, okay, but it's not Enchanted, though. Tomato, tomato, we're getting stoned in the street, we're getting hung in the town square, how dare you, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I don't really feel like I have to answer to somebody who wasn't alive when the song came out. Do you know what I mean? It's like, why am I on trial by you?
Yeah, not doing it. Right. But I think Enchanted, honestly, I got very emotional listening to it. If you've seen my reaction video, which is in full on the Patreon, by the way, in case you ever wanted to see that, I'm actually kind of scared to post the second part because Enchanted is in it. And I just had a mental breakdown. And that simply was just the nostalgia factor. Like, I was just so happy to be hearing her singing it again. And it was like hearing it in crystal, crystal clear HQ. I thought the bridge was cute. I liked the vocals. But again, it is different. It is not the same. It will never replace. But I'm interested. Like, it's not one that I would never listen to. I do find myself going back to it and just trying to, like, I like hearing the different ones sometimes. So I'm pleased with Enchanted. It could have been a lot worse. I'll say that. Could have been botched. A lot worse.
It could have been botched. And so, again, and once, it wasn't. You know, for Speak Now, 0% botched. Are there skips? Sure. Mm-mm. But 0% botched.
Well, up next after Enchanted, we have what can be considered a bop, which is better than revenge. A botch, which is better than revenge. Cricket.
Oddly, she put her, like, in terms of, like, production and the sound of it and et cetera, et cetera. She kind of put her entire Speak Now as the end of the fucking thing. And it's funny to me because it's like, okay, so are you embarrassed by it or are you not? I think that there's a kind of a universal truth about Better Than Revenge, which is that, like, if you took the words out of it and you just rocked, it is kind of like one of the greatest production-wise songs that she's ever...
Songs alive.
Yeah, it does go the fuck in, and I think that nobody can deny that. You know,
it has the reason why it goes in is because of the venom and rage and the misogyny that she spewed all over it.
Well, here's the thing about it is, like, I mean... The lyric change that she chose to do is like the entire song is a massive attack on somebody else. Just taking out the mattress line doesn't really do anything. And it's like it's a bad song because, like, you literally were catfighting in public over a Jonas brother. Can't get much lower than that. And also for
it
the fact that
it doesn't go worse.
It she didn't, like, there's all this stuff like, you deserve it. She says that about a million times in the song. It's like, no, she didn't. She's a C-list actress. She didn't do fucking anything to you. You're just insane. You're a psychopath. You're psycho.
You're crazy.
So it's like weird to me to see, like, I find the song, it's like, everybody jokes around like, oh, I have misogyny as a treat. Oh, it's just so fun. It's such a fun song. It's like, we can joke about that. It's a dumb song and it's a bad song. Like, let's be very clear about that. She could do whatever she wanted to the song, and I don't really give a shit because it's not good. So that's my opinion on it.
This is a really... I did not know you felt like this about Better Than Revenge. Well, it's just like there seems
to be like some weird, like, we should be allowed to call women whores movement that's coming back, and I don't really get it. So I'm kidding. I don't really understand, like, what is so great about Better Than Revenge that everybody feels like they need to raise their picket signs and demand that we have the mattress line in the song. And it's like, oh, well, that's because it's part of the canon. Lots of things are part of the canon. Doesn't mean that we have to and it exists still. Like, I'm just so sick of seeing
mad. So you're in favor of the lyric change?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I don't get why everybody is so mad about it. That's what I'm, like, what does it really matter? That's what I'm asking. What does it matter?
Well, let me answer. I think that it matters for some of the reasons that you mentioned, which is that it goes against the canon. The re-recordings project is supposed to be something that is like true to the historical record. And I feel like she's done a couple of things now that are trying to like paper over or paint over things that happened in her past. And this comes up in one of the reviews that we are going to talk about later, which is that she, instead of like re-engaging with her old self, her past self, the past version of herself, she is like relitigating it. And I think that that is an interesting, it's her right to do that, obviously, if she wants to, it's her own work. If she wants to interact with it that way, it's completely up to her. But to me, it feels not in spirit or in keeping with the spirit of the project to change stuff. And it doesn't matter what it is. I think like this isn't even specifically about Better Than Revenge. I'm equally as annoyed about Girl at Home getting just completely like fucked up for no reason. Any sort of change that she's going to make is irritating to me.
Well, I mean, my thing, both of those articles, by the way, were absolute pieces of shit to me. I hated both of them. I thought they were terrible. This is like, I don't think you would have expected me to say that, but I thought they were horrible. And I thought that the idea of like, she's simply wearing her old self as a costume, the fuck else is she supposed to do with it? She's not 19 anymore. I don't understand. She cannot be 19 again. So it's like, what are we saying? She has to go back in time and be 19 and accept everything that she said and did when she was 19 just because it's on the record. So now she has to do it forever, even if she doesn't agree with it.
You raise a good point.
I'm just saying, like, I don't want anybody to think like I think that the fact that she changed the Better Than Revenge lyric is amazing and great, and I don't have any problem with it whatsoever. It's just like, who cares? I don't get, like, if it was any other song, I might care. This is the one that we all kind of figured she might do something to. So the fact that people have had, like, total collapses, and it's, like, those articles about how, like, she's trying to, like, erase her history and, like, not be true to her, and she's not being honest or bold anymore because she refuses to slut-shame Camilla Bell in the year 2023 is just, like, fucking idiotic to me. And it's like the whole conversation around Better Than Revenge is dumb anyway because it's a bad song. And it's like, I keep seeing people ranking it high. I'm like, what is your malfunction, dude? It's not a good song. It feels like a weird horse to be riding right now. That's all I'm saying. It's just weird.
I think people just like to be different. They just like to be reactionary and contrarian. I don't think Better Than Revenge is a bad song, though. Like, I don't think that it's bad. I think it bangs.
Well, let me put it this way to you. So it's like, the song itself to me kind of takes her craft of songwriting and waters it down and bastardizes it so that there's nothing I do better than revenge. It's like, well, there's plenty of shit that you do better than revenge. It takes it and makes it this vindictive, like, I'm always trying to get somebody, which is exactly what people were saying about her at the time. It completely just fed into a narrative. That's why I think the actual context of it, like, I admitted that it bangs and it goes off, but that if you take the words out of it, sure.
True.
But the entire subject matter of the song is bad. And it's really starting to get to me.
The subject matter of the song
is that people are starting to fucking ride for it as if it's like this important canonical event that Taylor did this over a Jonas brother. It's like, now couldn't we, aren't we allowed to sweep some things under the rug? Since when is that not allowed?
I think we're lucky that it made it onto Taylor's version at all. Like, it's lucky that we got a re-recording because she literally said in 2014, I disavow this song. I don't like it. I don't stand by it.
Well,
I was in a place that is not where I am now.
I think she really felt pressured into, like you said, sticking to the canon and, like, I'm doing the project, so I may as well do it all the way. But I just think that she's like, I can't do it 100%. I got to do better than Revenge 95% and take that line out. I just have to. And it's like, I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah.
And it's not even about like the, it's more than anything, it's just stupid. It's not like I'm on my soapbox or anything, but it's like, now, isn't there a song that we could be caring about more? That's all I'm saying. Nobody cares about Better Than Revenge.
I mean, you bring up an interesting point though, which is that like people were talking about a lot at the time when this came out about her, how she used her songwriting, her pen to take aim at exes. And that's something that I think she fed into. She was interested in having people be scared of her and also using her craft and her skill to avenge herself. And that's something that she's continued to do. So I think that it is like, as a historical document, interesting because it shows the evolution of how she's like changed that. When we look at something like Vigilante Shit now, and Better Than Revenge, there's a correlation. There is a through line that goes directly from that to this current iteration of her songwriting, which is interesting. Mad Woman.
Yeah. It reminds me of something that somebody said when Look What You Made Me Do came out. They were like, oh, Taylor Swift is a grown woman and she's still acting like she's writing people's names down in her burn book. And it's like, well, she is. I don't know what to tell you.
She is.
I'm not saying that it's defensible or that it's a good character trait. I'm saying she's a human being. I'm saying she's a human being. Mm-hmm. If she had to have a flaw, being a little petty is not the worst thing that she could possibly fucking do.
No, you could be so many other things that are worse than a little bit cunty. And she is a little bit cunty. I mean, I do wonder, like, if she should have addressed it or, like, said something about it. I think it is weird to just drop the lyric change and go, but also don't call more attention to it because she didn't want to have it there in the first place. So I understand why she did it. I just, when I listened to the song, because the new version goes so fucking hard, I'd actually rather listen to it because the production is better. And I can tell that she's having the time of her life singing it too. It's like, if you hate this song so much, then why are you getting so much glee
she
from
feels
singing
like
no amount of vintage dresses gives you dignity?
Genuinely,
why
thought
are you
she
so into it?
Created the next Misery Business. She was like, this is as good as Misery Business. And it's like,
Well, it keeps getting compared. It keeps getting compared. And it's just, that's just not fair to Misery Business. That's not fair.
No, Misery Business was a cultural.
I don't know. I think that Taylor kind of stands by the fact that she hates Camila Bell. She'll never say it. She knows that what she did was kind of fucked up and wrong. But in her heart of hearts, I think she hates her.
And you can't admit that on the world stage. People will never forget. They'll never forget. Mm-mm. You hate this lady that hasn't had a job in 10 years? It's like, yup.
She hates her. The passion and the fury in the re-record, it's like there's no reason other than you still kind of have beef. Latent beef. She's not going to do anything about it. But like, you know, when she got back into the mindset, she was like, I see why you were so upset. I get you, old Taylor.
Well, it's like, speaking of Misery Business, it's like, I feel like I heard about it, but actually sitting in the stadium and hearing Misery Business play 10 minutes before she came on stage, I was like, like, I still don't get that choice. Like, all the Paramore songs that you could have played. I mean, Misery Business is really iconic. Hayley Williams has reclaimed it. It's great. We love it, et cetera, et cetera. But it's like, Misery Business is worse and Better Than Revenge. Hayley's not taking
out
worse.
Whore.
She is not removing
much
whore. And
worse.
She will not take out whore. Mm-mm. She won't do it. So it's like, why?
I mean,
this is
once
too,
a whore, you're nothing more versus
it's too nuanced.
Mattress.
It's too nuanced. It's like, I don't know what is going on inside her brain. All I know is, something ain't right. So the milk is wrong. Something's in the milk. I don't
circus
like
music.
It. The whole debate, I'm like tired of hearing about it. Circus, circus, circus. I'm just, I've had enough.
Well, and with that, we conclude the Better Than Revenge portion of this episode. Up next is Innocent. Cricket.
It's not on my list. I was like, oh, Haunted,
exactly.
Here we go.
I
nope.
Don't care.
Nope.
I don't care about this song. The production was fine. I listened. And you know what? That's all I can do. I listened. And that's all I have to say. Mm-hmm. Wasn't that good. Haunted. Haunted, for me, when I first heard it, I was like, there is something so weird about the production. Then I turned off all those settings. And then I was like, okay. I was listening to it last night and it fucking bangs. Mm-hmm. It goes she fucking put her Speak Now SE into it.
The Speak Now SE, it was
all of it inside. All of it.
I love it. And I love the little additions and changes that she made to the production, like the echoes, the distorted echoes in the first verse, and like the kind of, there's like more breathing, harsh breathing in the mm-hmm. in the new one than there is in the old one, which is like,
yeah, so, you can hear it really clearly.
I love when she commits to a theme, as we know. And she definitely committed. Yeah. She's like, this is a song about being in the woods and being really scared and being haunted.
And being haunted. And that's what I'm doing.
That's what I'm doing. I love it. I think it's really good.
I have to say, it was a slay.
Yeah. It might be my favorite of the re-recorded songs. I think that Haunted is one that could like replace the original for me. And there's always only one, usually mm-hmm. one or two on everyone. And Haunted is one of them for Speak Now on me.
I agree. Haunted and The Story of Us and Mine, honestly, for me, are like kind of my standouts from this. Last Kiss. I was really disappointed. I was really disappointed in Last Kiss. You'd think it would be easy. You would think it would be easy to do Last Kiss, but it's not. And I just didn't. She sounded bored. She sounded bored.
She don't care about that, man.
And she wrote, like, in her foreword, she mentioned it. And I was like, come on, girly. She's botched pretty much every Joe Jonas Holy Trinity song. Forever and Always, Holy Ground, and Last Kiss. They're all fucked in the head.
It's kind of like the final nail in the coffin on her revenge against Joe Jonas. It's like, now I'm going to fuck up every re-record. Although Mr. Perfectly Fine does go all the way the fuck in. So we have to give him that.
That's Lays.
But yeah, Last Kiss.
That slays.
It's another Coraline person song that it's just like creeps me out to listen to it because it's not of this world.
No Shaky Breath. It's odd.
Yeah, it's odd.
It's odd. And ours, I mean, good. No, yes. Really no.
The only thing that I said about this, and no, this is something that I feel like we talk about a lot because it's just like inevitable, but it's like, this is a song that, like, I don't know when exactly she recorded it, but I would imagine that recording it 13 years down the line when you know how things end up is not, it's like, I don't really feel like singing this shit. But it's like weird because mm-hmm. I feel like when she did it live as a surprise song, I was like, she's putting her entire pussy into this. And that's like on the re-record, it's like she's reading the telephone book. So I don't know. I mean, we're not in the studio. We don't know what's going on. So I can't speak to it, but it doesn't have the same
resonance.
Yeah, it doesn't resonate.
But I will say, you know, I think that she should make ours her LGBT icon pride song, because like that is much more meaningful than any of the fucking other LGBT pride songs that she has. Namely, You Need to Calm Down and Welcome to New York. Like, she needs to just take ours and make it a gay song, because if she played that for Pride Month,
oh, they'd get
the house down boots.
House down boots. That and Dancing with Their Hands Tied. Now turn that up mm-hmm. at the club. All of a sudden, mm-hmm. everybody's
turn
having a very good time.
Up.
Yep.
Exactly. So if she had any sense, she would. But as we know, no sense found. No sense found in that lady. Long Live. I was surprised. Long Live. Okay, Long Live is one of those songs that at this point in my life, I am divorced from Long Live. Like, we were married for a long time and now we are divorced. I look at her living her life without me and I say to you, congratulations. To me, I'm living a separate life from you. We're not together anymore. But I did listen to it all the way through. It is a long slog, but that last verse and chorus had me welling up against all the odds. I was thinking back on those beautiful times we shared.
And you know what? That's kind of like the point of Long Live. What makes the re-recording of it kind of special is that, like, it does have the quality to it. It's like you're looking through the photo album and you're like, oh, that was such a beautiful
time. The nostalgia factor.
I had my iPod Touch engraved with I had the time of my life fighting dragons with you.
Now that's a slay.
I was a stan. Also, I was married to Long Live. Literally a slay. But yeah, I mean, Long Live,
Long Live
just
is for 15-year-olds. It's for teenagers. That's what the song is
for. It's for the girls. I mean, I'll
give it up to them.
I appreciate it for what it is. Mm-hmm. If I'm in the right mood, it can make me cry. Like, you know, 2 days before Eras, for example.
Yeah, at Eras.
At Eras.
She did that as my surprise song for the Red Tour, and I bawled my fucking eyes out.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, in the right context, if she did it after Enchanted, I would die. I would have simply passed away.
Yeah. So in summation, long live, we respect her, we love her, but she's with somebody else now, and we respect that too.
Yeah. she's not ours. Superman, I listened to one chorus and then I turned that shit off. But I keep hearing people say that it slays. Madeline, can you report on that?
The bridge is good. The bridge, here's the thing about Superman is that, like, I'm never somebody who's going to be like, it's good. I'm not saying it's good. I ride for it. I listen to it. But if it does come up on shuffle, I do have a tendency to skip to the second verse through the bridge because I enjoy it. And it does go really, really hard on Taylor's version. The drums, it's so good. I love it. And I like the sentiment of the bridge, too. Like, I mean, first of all, part of the reason you hate the song so bad is because you thought it was about her dad for 10 years, which that would make me hate it, too. No, it being about John Mayer is almost worse, but not by much. Also, there's something, and I only just realized this. I think listening to it, Taylor's version was the first time I listened to it all the way through in a long time. I was like, there's something really sinister and disturbing about, like, a young girl, a 19-year-old girl, thinking about her gross 32-year-old boyfriend as Superman. I was like, ugh.
So true.
It's a foul song. Truly it is. But it does have its moments.
Well, you love it. And congratulations.
I hate
it. Happy birthday.
Love it. Love it is a strong word. Again, love it is a strong word, but... I don't, it comes on, I find it inoffensive generally.
To me, it flops. I guess we can go into the vault tracks, which I was terrified for. And Madeline, you told me that I shouldn't start with Electric Touch. And I'm kind of glad that I did because it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. It wasn't as crazy as I expected it to be. On my first listen, I was like, this is kind of boring. Upon a couple of re-listens, to me, it's the message in a bottle of the Speak Now vault tracks. Like, it's not really a good song, but it still goes off. And when it plays, when the chorus comes on, I'm like,
I'm pretty disappointed in it. It has no climax. And it's like, you wouldn't, of course, know this, but it's like, you put Fall Out Boy in a song, you expect a little bit of something, a little sauce, a little salt and pepper, a little something. And it just doesn't go anywhere. And it's like, fine. That's the thing about it. I don't hate it. I don't dislike it. But to me, it's almost like background music. Like,
It doesn't live up to its name.
No.
Electric Touch.
It is very bland.
I can see you really harnesses that energy more. I also would have maybe put Hayley Williams on Electric Touch.
Oh, yeah. Shifted her up. But it's like, I wouldn't have put Patrick on Castles Crumbling. So we would just have to
just
remove
taken him off.
We just have to remove him reality.
Goodbye. Thank you for coming. And Aaron Dessner produced this. It was interesting how the vault tracks were kind of split evenly between Antonoff and Dessner. Very interesting. We all know how I feel about Antonoff being on the vault tracks. Hate it. But I thought that Electric Touch was fine. The production on it was nice. Up to a real superstar, When Emma Falls in Love. How adorable is this song? This
Love
song
it.
Is so, so sweet. It is so girlish. I think I kind of predicted this a little bit. I said that it would be like a commentary on female friendship, and that it certainly is. And I love the idea of, like, I love in the bridge where she says, when Emma falls in love, I'm learning, because I feel like she was in such a place of, like, despair post Dear John, post Last Kiss, post, like, she spent a lot of this record pining and feeling like she was never going to love again. And I think that this is an interesting addendum to that record.
I like what you said about that part where she says she's learning is also one of my favorite parts of the song, because to me it almost reads like a song written by a younger sister about an older sister, which is sometimes female friendships can be like that, et cetera, et cetera. It's almost like I'm following in her footsteps, and everything that she does is something that I'm trying to emulate, because it seems like she knows what she's doing and I want to be like her.
She's confident.
She knows her worth. Cool.
She knows when to walk away.
Which is totally. And it's like, this being about Emma Stone is like, so I feel like Taylor has such a good read on people. That is exactly what I would think about Emma Stone too. She seems like very breezy and just like chill and cool.
Got her shit together.
Et cetera, et cetera. If Taylor
she doesn't ever think it.
Right. If Taylor ever wrote a song like this about me, and like being my friend, I'd have to lay down my life. Be the only option.
Literally.
I would kill myself.
Emma Stone's silence on this.
Yeah, it's deafening.
Is jarring.
And it's
hurting my feelings.
The song has like a certain like this is such a niche reference, but Diary of Me essence to it. In that,
oh my god,
I don't know.
It does.
I don't know what the fuck she's so New York when she's in LA means, and I don't know if anybody does, but it sounds good. And we clapped and we cheered. It's like, yep,
it's so true.
So true.
Also, like Cleopatra.
I love that. I love it.
So stupid.
I love it.
I love it. So this one really won me over, and this gave me interim Fearless Speak Now Taylor, and a couple of those Vault tracks gave me that. If this was a movie, is kind of, I think, in the same vein as well. I don't know how to describe it, but you know what I mean. They all have a quality, a tone, and essence that is like similar. It is not quite as evolved and mature or as incisive as the songs that made it onto Speak Now were, but they definitely have an element of Speak Now-ism to them that I think I always like to see the Vault tracks as works in progress. It's interesting to see the different iterations of writing she went through, and this gives me a really good insight into where she was.
Yeah, I totally get that. Agree. Thank you.
I can see you. The shot heard around the world. I was gagged into another dimension. And after the gag wore off, I have to say, I wonder, Mr. Antonoff, as the producer of this song, how much did you interfere with how it originally sounded? Because that clash... the Clash influence that is on it, that kind of Brit pop thing, you don't really hear it anywhere else on the record. It's not really a sound that she arrived at until, I don't think she's ever even really done something like this before. So I would like to know who the original producer of this was, because it wasn't Jack Antonoff. Who originally produced this? What did the demo sound like? Because it's too sexy and like too contemporary for Speak Now, in my view. It goes all the way off. I love it. I think thematically it makes sense that she wrote something like this when she was having her first like adult relationships and, you know, being a horny princess. But is it canonical? I don't know.
I'm about to say something that I'm sure is going to shock many and cause shock and upset. I have tried with this song. I don't like
it. Oh. Yeah.
I don't like it. I thought that I did, but I just, and it's not that it, like, what did you like about it? I don't know. I don't know. Everything about it, you'd think I would like it. It just does not. I think that it's like, I don't like it. And that's all I have to say about that. I don't care for it. I don't listen to it. I skip.
You know what part I do like? I like the part where she goes quiet. That's cool. That's like the So It Goes 1, 2, 3 vibe to me.
It wishes it was. I'll say that.
I think it's very interesting.
I like
that she chose this one as the one.
Yeah. Well, I think that it had the sexiest like spy vibe, I guess is what you want to go with. But it's like, well, now we could have been doing, I think we could have feasibly done Electric Touch because it has, you know, it's a little epic, if you want to call it that. I wouldn't, but you know what I mean? Like, it has a music video quality to it. You put Pete Wentz in there and he does something. Who cares? You know what I mean? But so it is interesting.
I just don't get it. Like, it's not Speak Now to me. It's a good song. But to me, like, if this was on the Red Vault, I would have been like, yes, absolutely. That makes sense. But this isn't really clicking to me as a Speak Now song. So is it a sneak? I don't know. The writing is very Speak Now that I can kind of understand, but the production, Jack Antonoff, you're on my fucking list. Just always.
As usual.
Forever.
He's never coming off.
As usual. He's always on it. Up next is, okay, the letdown of the century, Castles Crumbling, featuring Hayley Williams. We both knew this was going to be a letdown. There was no
way
that it was going to live up.
No, don't.
I thought that I had built it up too high.
I was in. For the ride of my life, I lit a candle. I said, this is going to be amazing. And I knew. Here's what I want to be very clear to people. It's like, everyone's like, oh, it's because you thought it was going to be a banger. It's like, no. I knew that there was a possibility it would be sad. Hayley Williams has the pedigree. Okay, I was aware of what it could go either way. That wasn't the problem that I had with it. It is one of the most profound disappointments of my life. I couldn't rank it. I couldn't rate it because it fills me with rage every time I even see the title. I refuse to do anything with it because I can't even think straight about it for how deeply and truly it has let me down. You know, this was like discovering that my mom had lied to me my whole life. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I said this on Twitter, and like when I realized this, it opened my third eye. I was like, this is literally just Viva La Vida, but bad. It's like, and I can't think about it yeah. any other way now. And I know that it's, and it's like, I shouldn't use the term ripoff, but I'm just going to just for, you know, the sake of, you know, the whole thing. But I know that it is because I know that she knows that fucking song. A, who doesn't? And B, she covered it in the BBC Live Lounge. And it she was a stripped song. Down little acoustic version, just like Castle's Crumbling is. It's literally Viva La Vida. Only it's not as good. You can't do Viva La Vida twice. You just can't.
Again, with Electric Touch, Castle's Crumbling does not live up to its name. There is so much mystique and effervescence in that title, and it just does not come through clearly to me. I think what is interesting about the song is the subject matter. There's a lot of debate about when exactly was this written. And to me, I think that this was probably written after her Grammy performance. A lot of people were saying the VMAs, but people forget that like Taylor only thought that she was on the losing end of that predicament for about 5 minutes. As soon as she got off stage and met the reporters, there was like an insane global rallying around Taylor Swift. She really did not get away from that. So I think if there was a moment where she thought, oh shit, my career is going to collapse before me, and what would that look like? Let me write a song about it. Nothing new-esque vibe. It would have been after the 2010 Grammy performance, because that had a lot of people with importance in the industry doubting her ability, which, as we now know, was a driving like factor in creating this album the way that she did in the first place. So that's interesting to me.
Yeah, I sure, it's interesting. Sure. I have nothing good to say about this song. I hope it falls off the face of the earth.
All right, Hatress. Up next, another Dessner number and my personal favorite vault track, Foolish One. I literally smiled, giggled, chuckled from start to finish all the way through this. My favorite Taylor vault moments are when it feels like a message in a bottle, a voice from the grave coming back to me, a version of Taylor that no longer exists, reintroducing herself. And that is how I felt with this song. And I also think that the opening line, my cards are on the table, yours are in your hand, really shows how she went into relationships before she got her heart broken like so severely, before she became jaded and guarded the way that we all do as we grow up, how she just kind of let it all hang out there and was open and vulnerable to being hurt and seeing where that took her. And I love how the song is kind of written as like a letter of advice to herself. That's very Swiftian. That's very old Taylor. And I just loved it. I think the outro drags on a little bit too long, but this is the best one for me.
I definitely agree. I think it's the very first night and like the Mr. Perfectly Fine of the Speak Now vault, in that it fits like a glove. I think this would have been perfect on the deluxe edition. It would have gone mm-hmm. Really well with if this was a movie in ours. That's where I think it fits absolutely perfectly with the record. It's also like a smart song too. So like the first time I listened to it, it didn't immediately click. I knew that I liked it, but I was like, I have to think about that. I had to do the math. It's for intellectuals. Okay. It's not for mm-hmm. your average person. I had to add up the numbers.
Not for Joe Schmo.
Come to the conclusions, mm-mm. et cetera, et cetera. I think it has the best writing of any of the songs on the vault. I think that's really, really crisp. She's not always the best at editing herself, which is why it's oftentimes on Speak Now the songs are ridiculous. But
long-winded, shall we say.
A tight, really good, you know, she all the one-liners, like the opening line, and then when she says I'll get your longing glances but you'll get your ring, like just like stuff like that is genius.
So
she's
good.
A genius. Bellissimo, brava.
So Taylor.
Brava.
Bellissimo. It was this to be, yeah, this is the highlight, the standout.
Yeah.
And bellissimo. I mean, I don't know what else to say. It's just wonderful.
Congratulations. Congratulations to us.
Up next,
we get to listen to it.
And Everybody wants us to scrap about this.
Which is so really annoying. Okay, first of all, let me say, I like Timeless, yes. I'm not about to mount my steed and go to war. I think it's a, and it's like, also, does anybody have any idea why perhaps I might like Timeless? As opposed
she's
to
married.
Zach. I, spoiler alert. So it's like, spoiler alert, yeah, I like the song. I'm not going
and
to
And I'm coming off literally a Zach's disastrous summer.
Well, not even from, that so much.
From a love
like,
perspective.
I also feel like you don't generally like songs about like eternal, everlasting love. I feel like that's not something that grips you. So
Invisible String
me.
Is the only one that ever got me. And it's because Invisible String is really smart. That's why I like it.
Yeah.
Timeless to me, when I first heard it, I knew from the second I heard about the fucking 1940 whatever that this was Mary's song, The Re-Up. And that is exactly what this is. She kind of had me going. She kind of had me until we got to the 1500s. And then I fucking lost my shit. Then I just started, I started laughing. I started chuckling. It's like, okay, do you remember in the Neolithic age when we were trading bronze coins? We were timeless. It was too.
I said,
do it anymore.
In my notes, this is what I have written. I said, if Foolish One is a vault track for the intellectuals, Timeless, well, she wasn't in honors classes. It's not, it really is not well thought out, but I think that this is my defense of it, like in general, not just for me personally, but like, I mean, she's talking about going into a fucking antique shop and looking at heirlooms, and you can see her in her gladiator sandals and her sundress and her wonderstruck bag. And it's like, this is,
buying
I
her 20th birdcage of the day.
This is a very, this song definitely belonged on Speak Now, whether it is a work of art or not. But I mean, another thing
this
is like,
song
it, she just kind of
was written on a Starbucks napkin.
She fumbles the bag. So, part of the song that really bothers me, I don't care. You know, like it's like that comment that you said that somebody made to you is like, well, she wouldn't have been able to read in the 1500s. It's like, well, Jack and Rose probably smelled like shit on Titanic. Nobody, like, what do you want? It's dumb. I hate it when people say stuff like that. It's like, suspend your disbelief for like a second. But something that drives me fucking crazy about the song is when she says, she's talking about like, you went off to the war, and then she says, but you would have been fine. And it's like, somebody didn't read Slaughterhouse-Five. I don't think he would have been fine. He has severe PTSD and he's going to be weird for the rest of his life. So that is something that takes me out of it personally.
But it would have been timeless.
But we would have been timeless. We cannot deny it. And I really appreciate the sentiment
There's something sweet about it. It's charming. There is a charming element to it. I will give it that. It made me laugh.
I think that she uses poor examples, and I think that's like the worst thing. Like, they're cliche examples, but I appreciate what she's trying to say, which is that like, even if we were in love during World War II, which is obviously a horrible time, even if we were in love during the 1500s, which was obviously a horrible time, even if all these horrible things would have happened to us, no matter who we were, no matter where we were, we would have still been in love. I think it's a very beautiful set. That's why I like it. I think it has a purpose.
It's tied to Invisible String.
It has a purpose.
It's like Invisible String's ugly, ugly, ugly stepsister.
I was just not even ugly. I would say that it's more of like, she wasn't, you know, she didn't get into Princeton. She's kind of like the, you know, the pretty one. She doesn't have the grades. She doesn't have the
je ne sais quoi.
The pedigree, if you will. She marries a cobbler. Etc. Etc. So
she marries a cobbler, and she walks down the town square, and she's the belle of the town square. She is. Right. They open their windows, and they say, "Hello, Timeless."
Exactly. Like every criticism that I hear about Timeless, I'm like, "All right," but I like it. So
this is the thing. It's like, it's not a good song. You have to lean into the camp of it. And I saw someone say on my TL that if you don't like Timeless, then you fundamentally don't like Taylor Swift. Like, this is the most Taylor Swift song ever of all time. And if you don't like it, it means that you just don't like her. And I was like, all right.
I said something of that ilk, but I was joking. I was joking.
No, it wasn't you. It wasn't you. It was one of our mutuals, actually.
You have to agree, though.
And it was right after I tweeted that it was stupid.
It is very Taylor. You have to admit at least that.
It is. Like, it is so Taylor. But this is the part of Taylor that I hate. Yeah. Well, I don't hate it. It's just, to me, it's funny. Like, I think it's funny. I have to accept it about her.
I enjoy it. Anyway, so yeah, I'm sorry, I have to say the
chorus gets stuck in the head.
Well, I'm thinking now about, like, I don't think you and I have ever had, like, a genuine argument about a song. Like, that was serious. It's like, I mean, you hate
Today
Dorothea.
Was a fairy tale, maybe.
I kind of like it. But you are the one. I don't have strong opinions about it. I don't care about it. You're like, well, that's because you hate the argument in a fairy tale and you don't feel the magic in the air. It's like, well, I don't care about it.
Well, you don't. You don't feel the magic in the air.
I don't.
It's not my problem.
But it's interesting to me that people always think we're going to, like, have some massive argument. And it's like, it makes me feel like I have to. Or it's like, well, I don't really want to.
When have we ever, though?
And the only time that we ever did was Night One Chicago, when we had that horrible, horrible trip home, and we started arguing about something that Taylor may or may not have said. That is the only time we've ever argued.
Oh my god, I forgot about that.
It wasn't funny. It wasn't funny.
It wasn't funny.
It wasn't funny.
And you didn't want to hear it.
Nope.
And it wasn't even really an argument. No, it was just two snapping turtles at the end of their rope snapping. And we were literally just snapping tired turtles.
And I would never
And we woke up the next day and said, slate clean.
Yep. And we said, that didn't happen. Who was that?
We said, that was stupid.
We slept.
I think we literally joked about it the next morning. We were like, that was ridiculous.
Remember when we were like arguing about, and we were like, yeah, that was dumb.
Anyway. And we had the most bellissimo day afterwards.
Well, that's, you know what?
What a time. That's show business. That's show business. Moral of the story is, if we're going to fight, you're not going to hear it.
Very true. Yeah. And if you ever do, you should be scared, because that's not.
You should be scared.
Probably at least.
If we're not being a united front,
that's scary.
Podcast is gone.
That's scary.
We are a team. Two-headed snake. Don't forget. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Speak Now Forward, because I think we got a lot of interesting, juicy information, and it made me very emotional about it all.
So I have to
first of all,
something.
She said that she wanted.
I haven't read it. I don't have my physical copies yet. I expected them to be here by now, so I haven't read it. I always
Perfect.
Read them when I get.
I'll read it to you. I don't have the whole thing. I just have the. I have kind of like some of the important snippets. So people that haven't read it either, you can get some information here. So here is some of what she said. In my darker moments, I was tormented by the doubt that swirled loudly around my ascent and my merits as an artist. I was trying to create a follow-up to the most awarded country album in history while staring directly into the face of intense criticism. I have been widely and publicly slammed for my singing voice and was first encountering the infuriating question that is unfortunately still lobbed at me to this day. Does she really write her songs? Spoiler alert. I do. I wanted to get better, to challenge myself, and to build on my skills as a writer, an artist, and a performer. I didn't want to just be handed respect and acceptance in my field. I wanted to earn it. To try and confront these demons, I underwent extensive vocal training and made a decision that would completely define the album. I decided I would write it entirely on my own. I figured they couldn't give all the credit to my co-writers if there weren't any. But that posed a new challenge. It really had to be good. If it wasn't, it would be proving my critics right. And I was like, wow, this really made me like think of Speak Now, obviously in a way that I've already thought about it before, but more deeply, which is that this was a huge gamble and a huge risk for her. She eschewed the formula of, again, as she mentioned, the most awarded country album in history, which is crazy. She put that aside and said, let me show you what I can fucking do as an artist, as a writer. And I think that that takes a certain level of delusion to be able to do. And I really respect and appreciate that.
I never know if she has cojones or if she just has pure delusion. Mm. I think it's a little bit of both. And I respect it. I love it.
I respect it. I love to see that. And also, yeah, the pressure that was on her. You know, they say the sophomore slump. But really, I think for a lot of people, Fearless was her first album. It was the first time they encountered her. So Speak Now really was the sophomore effort in a lot of people's minds. And yeah, making this – and also the vocal training, the getting lessons, that's something we've always suspected but never had confirmed. So that explains why there was such a jump in quality between the records.
She was ripping. She all of a sudden
was
I still remember
ripping.
My reaction to a lot of the vocals on Speak Now being like, oh, she came on this shit mad. Mm-hmm. Like, she was said, I can sing, thank you very
she
much
came to slay.
And she proved them all wrong. I mean, did Speak Now win album of the year? No. But it won album of the year in my heart.
It won album of the century
it certainly did.
In the Evolution of Snake Awards.
Oh, it sure did.
So she goes on to say, I had no idea how much this pain would change me, that this was the beginning of my series of creative choices made by reacting to setbacks with defiance. Sorry, that's something we have literally said over and over again. Hilarious. That my stubbornness in the face of doubters and dissenters would become my coping mechanism through my entire career from that point forward. Pathological people pleaser. This exact pattern of enacting my own form of rebellion when I feel broken is exactly why you're reading these very words and why I'm releasing this album now. I had the nagging sense that in the most intense moments of my life, I had frozen. I had said nothing publicly. I still don't know if it was an instinct, not wanting to seem impolite, or just overwhelming fear, but I made sure to say it in all these songs. I decided to call the album Speak Now. It was a play on Speak Now, Forever Hold Your Peace, and it symbolized a chance to respond to the chatter and commentary around my own life. Some of these emotional revelations were surprising to people. Some expected anger and instead got compassion and empathy with innocent. Now, come on now, Miss Girl. Some expected a kiss off breakup song, but instead got a hand on heart apology back to December. It was an album that was the most precious to me because of its vast extremes. It was unfiltered and potent. In my mind, the saddest song I've ever written is Last Kiss. My most scathing is Enchanted, and my most wistfully romantic. Oh, sorry. My most scathing is Dear John, and my most wistfully romantic is Enchanted. So that's the selection that I wanted to play for you from the foreword. Compassion and empathy with innocent.
I thought it was interesting in one of those articles. I think it was The Atlantic. She referred to innocent as smug. I was like, yeah.
It's true. It literally
is. It's very condescending.
It's a finger wag.
It's very condescending.
Oh, you silly man. You shouldn't have come after me. You should know better. 32 years old and still a child.
She really
compassion
is trying it.
And also, and empathy. That shocked me.
If I was reading this 13 years ago, I would have been like, oh my God, so true queen. Like, she can do nothing wrong. But it's like a lot of this, it's rubbing me kind of the wrong way. Dude, is that weird to say? Like, oh, the most awarded country album of all time, by the way.
Oh my God, like, that doesn't rub me the wrong way at all. Right. I'm like, slay. I think we should be going down this. That inclusion gave to me a sense of the stakes for what she had to lose when she was making Speak Now.
Okay.
That's how I felt about it.
I guess I'm feeling that it's a little bit ham-fisted.
Well, yeah. I think the re-recordings are, at this point, all kind of being ham-fisted a little bit.
Kind of like just a little bit of like getting into like vanity project more than passion project. Is that horrible to say? Am I gonna get tomatoes?
Well, it is a vanity project. Like, at the end of the day.
I'm not saying it's like wrong, mm-hmm. but by the way, I'm not saying it's wrong, but it's like, it's very me, which is kind of how Taylor's at her best anyway.
Yeah. Well,
if we can admit that.
That's her whole
so,
thing.
Anyway, that was just.
I think when she committed to doing the re-recording, she didn't realize like how many that she would have to do. And like once she made them a moment with Red, she set the bar really high, which is why I think Speak Now had kind of a mixed reception, because there was never going to be another rollout for a re-recording like Red. Red just had All Too Well 10, and that made everybody gag because it was very good. And it's very rare that as an artist you keep something that special off of a record. You usually lay it all out there because you want to put your best foot forward. So it makes sense to me that most of the vaults are kind of flops, you know, that's just they are cutting room floor excerpts. It's very rare that you're going to get something that is better or changes the way that people perceived an album to begin with.
I also feel like a lot of the vaults are like on a person by person basis. It's like, now I know damn well not everybody thinks The Very First Night is the greatest song ever made.
But to you.
I do. It is. To me. I do agree that like most of them are bad, but it's like every now and then somebody really clicks with one of them. It's like You All Over Me. That song has shooters.
It's not my not me. Couldn't be
and
me.
If I take
shocked.
The memory out of my brain
I was scared.
Of You All Over Me in Chicago Night 2, I would give it to you. I really would.
I don't want
anybody
it.
Anybody who stands it. I would
don't give
that
it
to
me.
In a heartbeat.
Get it away from me. Take mine as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that this is part of the reason why the reviews coming in are not so great. But can I just say that the Pitchfork review for this album is one of the worst pieces of writing that I have read in recent history. There is no thesis. There is no opinion. There is no analysis. It is literally a summation of what Speak Now is, which also the way they characterized it was wrong as well. The person that wrote it doesn't fucking understand what the album is about. And I'm just going to read an excerpt from it and we can discuss how stupid it is. Losing some of that teenage angst makes these songs immediately less enthralling. Duh. In the originals, jagged inhales, sneered words, and ad-libbed laughter, you could hear how deeply those stories affected their author. Hearing her sing them now, they sound slightly anonymous, more like lullabies and folk songs than expressions of pressing concern. Well, maybe because dating John Mayer is not a fucking pressing concern to her in the year of 2023. What do you want her to do? Rip open her skin and bleed exactly all over the mic? What do you expect from her?
What drives me fucking crazy. It's like I don't understand what these people want.
You're not performing and your story really well enough for me. Do it again. Like, what the hell?
Exactly. Here's also my hot take is like, I don't even get why we're reviewing these fucking things.
What's to review?
Like, I don't, it's not a whole brand new record. Do you know what I mean? It's like, why are we fucking reviewing this shit? I think it's super.
They didn't even talk about the vault tracks.
Like, not to say you can't.
They don't even mention the vault.
Can't react.
Like,
to
they're
it.
Not talking about the new material. They just want to talk about Better Than Revenge and whether or not the new recordings are as good as the other ones. You should not be reviewing this as an album. It's basically a remastered version of Speak Now, and Pitchfork does just remastered reviews. So I don't understand why this is getting taken as new information when they're not even reviewing. Like, they barely mention the vault songs, and there's actually. If you are interested in Speak Now and you know the story, there is stuff to mine and stuff to discuss there in a review. And yet.
But these people don't know that, which is exactly another part of the reason why I don't feel like these records should be reviewed by publications.
They're not for them.
It's not for you.
It's for us. It's for the diehards.
It's for us, the Swifties, mm-hmm. the people who actually give a shit about these records. You and I have more interesting things to say about these re-records than a staff writer on The Atlantic. I guarantee
100%.
You that. 100%. Because we have been there. 100% of the damn time.
Well, because we know the story.
You couldn't understand it. But now I feel like it's so commercialized. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, oh, Grimace's favorite album is Speak Now. Oh, he's in his Evermore era and like this, that, and the other thing. And it's like, okay, it's like, this is fun and cute, but it's like the vast commercialization of the records as a whole, as of the re-records, completely strips them of what I feel like is their original purpose.
Yeah, I mentioned like this to money, you, and there's the something money. So weird about like Taylor Nation being like, that July 9th chapter edition. There is something so sinister and evil about that. It's like, these are special, special moments that are things that like the fans declared and decided and said were important to them over the years. And now we're just using them for retweets. We're using them for streams. We're using it for this, that, the other thing. It's like the endless content mine. It's, we can't just let anything rest. Everything has to be dug up again. And that's the purpose of the re-recordings. But the way that each one is, like you mentioned, I mean, obviously a product that is being sold. It's like, is it not enough just to sell the album? Do we have to do all the merch? Do we have to do streaming party? Do we have to do everybody tweet your favorite lyrics of Dear John? Like, it takes some of that, what Taylor called unfiltered potency, out of it. It kind of, it sullies the legacy a little bit, a little bit.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it too. And it's like, you also said that like all of the nostalgic albums have been done, mm-hmm. and it's like now we just have 19. Now we have Debut, which I mean,
I don't have high hopes for that.
But other than that, we have 1989 Rep, and it's like I'm not gagging to hear those. I'm sorry. I'm excited for the Vaults. Who isn't? I just love a new song. But it's like I don't know how she's going to market them. That's my big thing. Reputation, more than 1989, I get. 1989, its whole thing was, this is a pop album. And it's like, that's it. That's its whole thing.
Well, that's the story. It's like, I guess we're going to get another kind of waffling forward about like how brave it was of her to go pop. But like that story is not resonant anymore because she's been pop. And we know in hindsight, she always was pop. So it's kind of like, it's like you said, capturing lightning in a bottle twice. Possible? No, it's not.
Not possible.
But yeah, so the one line that I did like about the review from Pitchfork was, think of the new Speak Now as a call and response between who she was and who she is, a teenager full of questions about what it means to grow up, an adult woman who's still turning them over to find new answers. But I didn't get the sense that Taylor was nice. Particularly grappling with any of those questions, nor should she be, because a lot of them have like been answered in her later works. You know, it's kind of a lot to expect that she answers or that responds to all of the things she brought up on the album in these six vault tracks, because again, the vault tracks are like additions. And
well, they're also supposed to be like a true addition, like of the moment, not something that she's adding in later, which is like, again, do these people not understand what we're doing here? Do these people not understand the mission?
They don't get the purpose.
We are here to re-release the records.
We are here. We are queer. We are Taylor's version.
Yep. You're literally,
we are on
Taylor's version.
We're on the streets. Okay, let's get into the Atlantic review, because this was interesting to me in the way that a lot of the times people try to over-intellectualize when they're writing a review. And this just, I guess, is a great example of that. The new Better Than Revenge doesn't only soften the blow of Swift's original attitude sung in her richer, more mature voice. The song loses the pained, angry, and sanctimonious sound of her teenage self. Fucking duh. As hostile as the lyrics may have been, their unfiltered quality made the original song powerful. In its adjustment, the track reveals the curse of Swift's re-recording endeavor as a whole. Try as she might, she can never recapture the same potency these albums had when they were released. In Speak Now, Taylor's version, Swift struggles more than she has on any other variant so far to close the gap between her present and her past. This time, she sounds like she's performing as, rather than engaging with, the person she used to be. What does engaging with it look like to you? And how was it different on Fearless and Red than it is to Speak Now? I don't understand. Is it that you don't know Speak Now well enough that you don't understand what the vault tracks contribute to our idea of the record as a whole? All Too Well was very obvious. That was very obvious to anyone that didn't know that much about Red. There was a lot of additional information. Did you do what the original reviewers did with Speak Now and listen to the vault tracks and decide that these were a teenage girl's words and not really dig into them and look into them for what they were and see that she actually was engaging with the person she used to be in those songs?
I hated this fucking article from start to finish.
This is in the Atlantic, by the way.
I read it twice.
If anybody wants to read it, it's nonsense.
I read it twice and I read the last... I thought it was all right, and then I got to the last paragraph, and it, like, filled me with, like...
unspeakable rage.
Unimpeded rage. Mm-hmm. I was like, you're an idiot. You're a fucking idiot. I don't usually get, like, so riled up about stuff like that, but it's like, that was just dumb.
Bad journalism.
Everything she said was stupid.
Yeah, well, here's another... So basically, to answer the question of how would it look like for her to engage, this is the writer's perspective on why Fearless and Red were better than Speak Now. And I fundamentally disagree with this, because on the whole, to me, Speak Now is the best re-recording in terms of being the most faithful and having the most interesting vault tracks, other than Red. Red probably is the best vault tracks, but... half of Red was a fucking hack job. It really was. Half of it was shit. So this is their example. Up until now, the singer has successfully time traveled by building on her work or adopting a new outlook in her vocal performances. On Fearless, she sang as if she were reminiscing about her younger self, lending tracks such as Love Story and 15 a welcome 15 to be pointed out. Are you fucking kidding me? 15 sounds exactly the same. Lending tracks a knowing warmth with her subtly altered inflections. On Red, she transformed Girl at Home, a finger wag. Wagging ditty about cheating into a cheekier, lighter dance track by overhauling its production. And she expanded All Too Well into a 10-minute showstopper. It's unbelievable that someone would point to Girl at Home as an example of a good re-record. You don't know fuck all about anything.
I'm gathering that what she thinks is so great about this project is that
they're different,
which is weird
because she says
the whole thesis of the article is the fact that she changed the lyric in Better Than Revenge means that she's no longer bold
after being like it's better so when it's like, different. That doesn't make
it's
any
better
sense.
When it's different, and it's like, oh, she's adding. I can appreciate like in a re-recording a new version of something. I mean, frankly, I know you feel a certain way about it, but Girl at Home, nobody cared about that song except for you, so do whatever the fuck you want to it, because like it's just a different version and the old one still exists. So it's like whatever, she's gonna do something different with it, but it's like, what does that really do?
That doesn't add anything to Red. I'm sorry. What she did to Girl at Home doesn't add anything to Red. It doesn't make the song better. It doesn't give us a new understanding of it. It's not even good. The version that was done is shit as well. It's not even good. It sounds like a demo.
And it's the same thing with like Change in the Lyric and BTR. It doesn't, that like, there's nothing to be mined from that.
It's just,
you know what I mean?
A change.
Like, what are you cobbling out of that? Like, and her, the ending being like, oh my God, what is the last line of it? Can you read it to me so I can get really, really mad? Because it's really bad and I hate it.
Oh, this is really bad. Okay, I'll just read you the passage that it is. As I listened to Speak Now Taylor's version, I longed, actually, I need to start a little bit earlier. So she says, this person allegedly listened to Speak Now when she was a teenager. Okay, I disagree that they have that.
Allegedly.
I disagree that they have that relationship with it. When I listened to Speak Now for the first time as a teenager, I was shocked by how it contained the kind of scathing thoughts I sometimes wish I could voice. I couldn't believe that Swift was able to convey in the same album devastating despair at a failed romance, Dear John, all-encompassing awe at the blossoming of a crush, Enchanted, and tender yearning for the simplicity of her childhood, Never Grow Up. And yes, the mattress line in Better Than Revenge made me gasp. As I listened to Speak Now Taylor's version, I longed for that boldness. What if Swift didn't rewrite one lyric in the chorus of Better Than Revenge, but wrote a new song altogether? What if she changed the target of Mean now that she's exceeded the expectation she'd outlined for herself in its lyrics? What if she expanded Last Kiss like she did All Too Well? This is driving me fucking mental. I know now that one of the bravest things a person can do is create something with unblinking sincerity to put it all on the line. Swift says in the liner notes for the new album about her experience writing Speak Now, if only she'd found the courage to indulge the person who taught her that lesson in the first place. You should be dead.
I don't know what the fuck she's talking about. What are you talking about?
There.
You should be hung. What are you talking about? And mind you, what she's really referring to is the fact that she changed the mattress lyric in Better Than Revenge. Like, this is why Taylor's no longer bold. She's, and
or has no courage. It's stupid.
It's like,
and also,
girly.
Can I just say, this person doesn't understand what the fucking re-recordings project is. The re-recordings, the project, the entire point of it is to do note-for-note remakes to devalue the original masters and to include songs from the vault that were from the original writing sessions. It is not Taylor Swift sit down and write a new song party. There's an album called Midnights that's new. If you would like to listen to it, please go and engage with it. This is not the time to have new recordings or newly written songs. The whole point is that we are going back into the past. So saying, what if she wrote a whole new song about Better Than Revenge? What the fuck is she going to say about that? First of all, you say that it's bad that she said the mattress line. Second of all, you say it's the best thing you ever heard. Third of all, you're like, write something else. What are you asking for? What if she changed the target of Mean now that she's exceeded the expectation she'd outlined for herself in its lyrics? How would she do that?
Then it wouldn't be a re-recording.
Shake It Off was about going to Party City and shaking off all the party hats that you put on your head? Who cares? This is stupid. What if she expanded Last Kiss she did All Too Well? All Too Well wasn't expanded. That is the original version of All Too Well. What you are listening to and what you're familiar with is the shortened version.
Just
and if you knew anything about anything, you wouldn't have written a paragraph as fucking stupid, as uninformed as that. I'm sorry. This is bad journalism. You didn't even do your research. You don't understand what the project is that you're reviewing and attacking. This is what I don't like.
Which is what goes back to, why are we reviewing this? Why are we reviewing this?
If you don't have anything interesting to say, shut the fuck up.
Swifties alone.
This is the review. You're listening to the official review of Speak Now Taylor's version right now. Anything that you see online written by some Joe Schmo is wrong. I'm sorry. This is not a review. Like, how can these people stand by their claims to be writers? You do your fucking due diligence and your homework on your subject. And you know what? The Taylor verse is so layered now, and it goes so far back that most people can't be bothered to engage with it. It's too difficult to approach. And my response to that is, if it's too difficult to approach, don't approach it. Leave it alone. Let us do it.
Literally. I have not read anything about the re-recordings project
that has said anything interesting
from a publication that has said anything of note. It's like the only thing that both Pitchfork and the Atlantic article said, well, she doesn't really sound like she's 19 anymore,
lot
of the songs don't have the same oomph.
Duh.
What do you want her to do,
Benjamin Button? Yeah, you want her to regress? This is the thing.
This is not what the project is. Mm-mm. And like, yes, we make comments like, oh, this song isn't as good because it doesn't have the young voice, et cetera, et cetera. I am well aware that there's nothing that can be done about that. And if I really have a problem with it, guess what I do?
Listen to the stolen version. Exactly.
Speak Now 2010. That's what I do. And that's what everybody else does,
and also,
too. There's no reason to make a comment on
these it. These reviews should really center around the fact, and not to go full Swifty, but these reviews should really center around the fact that this is a remarkable project, the first of its kind, and that it is about agency and ownership of a woman's artistic work that was taken from her by two men who thought that they could get one over on her. That is the point of this project. And if you're not centering your review around what a feat and an achievement it is to even approach a project of this nature, because she could have just recorded every single song and put it out like all together at once and done nothing. She's made it special. She's made it an event for the fans. Yes, there's a commercialization element to it, of course, but this is a gift and a treat and a way for her to interact with her fan base the same way she has always done, and what has made her different and more special than other artists, building that parasocial relationship in a way that really feels genuine and honest and true. And if you don't understand that, why are you on the mic? Shut the fuck up.
I mean, it's just like a fundamental misunderstanding of like the fandom and like why it reminds me of like back in like 2014 and 2015 when articles used to come out about Taylor Swift is not your friend.
Oh, really? Like wow. And thanks. I thought I could text her and ask her for advice.
Condescending mm-hmm. bullshit. It's like, obviously, I'm well aware of the fact that she is first and foremost a capitalist.
We say it all the time.
I am aware of that. But there is a very fundamental emotional aspect to these re-recordings that I feel like nobody talks about it.
No.
It's like nobody
it's
wants
never
to give
mentioned.
Her the carrot.
Well,
nobody wants to
yeah,
give her the
nobody
carrot.
Wants to be like, this is fan service on a different level. No other artist is, and yes, she is doing this to reclaim her masters and her art as well, but I think she's also doing this to relive it. Because it was so painful to have it taken from her that to relive it with the people who cared about it and made it something for her to begin with is so special. And I hate that that is getting brushed over in the reception of these fucking re-recordings. They're just not getting it.
Just so people can say she doesn't sound 19 anymore. Wow.
And the,
it's groundbreaking.
And the idea of like reviews always being written by people who aren't fans to have an objective perspective, this is not one of those projects. This is not a new album. This is not something that you can approach with no context and understand. You're just going to have a stupid opinion on it. If you are not intimately, and I mean like if you're not listening to it and going, this note is different from the original re-recording, or like this vocal change, blah, blah, blah. If you're not able to engage with it like that,
what's the point?
Why are you writing about it? What do you have to say?
Well, the only way to truly engage with the re-recordings is to think of them as a compare and contrast to the original. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I understand some people have problems with that, but it's like, what the fuck else are we doing?
It's fun
when we're reviewing.
I find
them?
It really
That's
fun.
Literally, the point. It's fun.
I love to do it.
It's this one's different. What did she do to this one, et cetera, et cetera? Why does she sound different in this one as opposed to? It's fun. Like, it's just supposed to be. It's an element to the fan service and why it's such a special thing that
Easter
we get to
egging.
Go
nobody
with
wants
it.
To talk
and
about
they don't
that.
Get it.
Nobody wants to
they
mention
don't
that.
Get it.
They mention.
They don't.
They
get
mention
it.
Its success. But they don't mention why it's so successful. They don't really go into why this is so unique, why it has been such a resounding yes from the fans to re-engage with the new work. It's like, you don't get it. If you get it, you get it. And if you don't, you don't. And if you don't, then be quiet, Tiffany. Be quiet.
Mm-hmm. And that's that on that?
On that. Well, I think
we could rant and rave about this.
We could go for days, mama. We could go for days. Well, I think that's all that we have to share with you on Speak Now Taylor's Misunderstood version. I think it's what I'm going to call this episode. But thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to go to patreon.com/swiftologist to, you know, check out the Patreon. We have a lot of interesting content going up at the moment, actually. We've got unedited reactions. We have reviews of albums, of concerts. We should all stay tuned for Madeline's upcoming publication, The Lizard Review. Is that the official title of it? It should be.
It's a working title.
It's a working title.
But when I was asked that same question earlier, I was like, I'm not coming up with anything else, though.
The Lizard Review is going to be a place where you can get real music commentary from someone who is not coming at things with absolutely zero context or information or emotional connection to what they're writing about.
I'm boots on the ground literally every fucking day.
Madeline is not going to be reviewing the new AC/DC record. That's not her bag.
No. Tentatively, I think my first review is going to be Olivia Rodrigo's Guts, like my first new release, which I'm super excited about because I feel a very unbiased perspective on the Chop Prodigy. So I'm really looking forward to that.
I'm really excited to see what you have to say. Anyway. We have a lot of interesting things to say about her. We'll also do, I think we actually might do an Evolution of Snake episode on that. So you can get a preview of Madeline's thoughts there.
Let's just Olivia it up.
We're Livvies.
Olivia it up. We're Livvies. Yeah, we're Livvies. We made this joke the other day. Like, we're literally Livvies.
We are Livvies. But yeah, so stay tuned. You'll hear from us soon. And if you ever are wondering where to find us behind the paywall, baby, patreon.com/Rictologist.